My name is Hildur Óskarsdóttir and you're listening to Konur í tækni or Women in IT, a podcast from Vertonet, a non-profit organization for women in IT in Iceland. Here, we interview women working in the STEAM fields in Iceland, discuss the careers they've built, the challenges that they have faced, and why they love to work in the tech industry. My guest today is Lía Kulitskowski. Lía is a digital marketeer, content creator and a social media specialist that currently works as a marketing manager at Tern Systems. Before joining Tern Systems last year, Lía worked as a digital marketing specialist for the Blue Lagoon, content creator for Marel, and before that she worked for Icelandair, where she was a marketing specialist for North American Gateways. Well-written content and content creation are extremely valuable to all companies, especially those in the tech industry and those who sell their products online. It's essential for attracting, engaging and converting potential customers in today's highly competitive, technology-driven landscape. And this is what I love about technology. Let's not forget what the A stands for in STEAM. It's arts, and it includes creativity. And a big part of creativity is the written word that plays an important role within science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Lía has an interesting story and background, and I'm looking forward to talking about her career in digital marketing, her adventures in travel, her passion for food, and how ice skating has played a big part in her life. But before we talk to Lea, I would like to thank our sponsors. Gecko are specialists in innovation talent. The Gecko team helps companies to attract talent and empower people to succeed in their roles. It's easy to get in touch. Just drop them a message at hello@gecko.is and one of their specialist consultants will be in touch. Tactical is a B2B SaaS platform that enables you to build, visualize and automate your contracts and onboarding with a no-code platform and a simple API. Tern Systems designs and builds air traffic management software solutions. They employ more than 70 specialists from 16 different nationalities based in Iceland and Europe. Tern Systems is driven to meet the demands of the future in ATM and to be the preferred partner delivering simplicity and security to the global airspace. So Lea, welcome to the Konur í tækni podcast. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
We always begin by asking about background. If we just begin by you telling us when and where you are born.
Okay. I'm 31 years young and I'm born and raised in Toronto, Canada.
And you have a multicultural background. Tell us a little bit about that.
I do. So I am Canadian through and through. But you know my last name. I spoke to you about it, but it's Polish. Mm-hmm. I'm a quarter Polish. I'm also a quarter Italian. And I'm half Chinese. So my mother's family comes from southern China. And my grandmother, my father's mother, is Italian. And my grandfather is Polish. I also actually have, fun fact, I have a dual citizenship, which is why I'm able to work here. So I actually have an Italian passport because of my grandmother.
Okay, yes. That is interesting. So a very true multicultural background there.
Yes, I think I represent it very well.
Yeah, but like in your upbringing, you're born and raised in Toronto.
Yes, my mom and dad were also both born and raised in Toronto.
Okay.
So it was my two sets of grandparents that immigrated to Canada, and then my parents met at school, actually. And I guess for my childhood, it was a mishmash of all sorts of cultures, actually. Not only my own, I grew up eating really good Italian food. I have memories of my grandfather frying up some pierogi from a Polish dish. And of course, just a lot of good Chinese food, more the Cantonese cuisine. So it's less spicy. And I think we're going to talk about this a bit later.
Yeah, but
I love Chinese cuisine. And yeah, I think I was really lucky and fortunate to grow up in a household where I was able to experience so many different cultures. Also at school, because I come from one of the most multicultural cities in the world. Yeah. So I was able to be exposed to not only my own, but to everyone else's.
Yeah, that's so interesting. We'll maybe come back, yeah, to the love of food later in the show. But you went through high school and all the school system there in Toronto. Tell us maybe about the difference between that system and the system that we have here in Iceland.
Yeah, so I know it differs a little bit. So I went to elementary school, middle school, and then high school. And then I went to university. And a lot of Icelanders actually mix up college and university in the North American culture. So yeah. Canada is also different from the U.S., but Canada, we have the post-secondary education system. We have university, which would be like where you get your Bachelor of Arts, science, engineering degrees, and college is more, let's say, a more hands-on, more practical versus more academic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's not similar in Iceland because Iceland has mentaskóli.
Yeah.
But we go through high school from grade 9 to 12. We graduate at 18. We move on to university at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And I graduated at 22 years old. So my life was kind of set then. And I could have gone further, but I decided to move.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe come again. Yeah, come to that a little bit later. But like as a student, what were your strengths?
The arts.
Yeah.
Absolutely the arts.
Yeah.
I was never a big fan of the sciences or maths. And
no?
No, not really. They weren't my strengths.
No.
I was more drawn to gym and drama and art class.
Yeah.
More and English.
Yeah.
More creative aspects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally relate to that. But during those years, maybe when you like your teenage years, did you have any future goals right there and then of what you wanted to become, or any role models that you had that you?
You know, that's such a good question. I think the answer is a little boring because at the time I had no idea. I had no idea what direction I was going in. At the time, I think I had the dream of becoming like an elite athlete at the time, because I was in competitive figure skating.
Exactly. When did that become a passion of yours?
Well, passion would come later in life, probably around 10, but I started at 3. My parents put me on the ice at 3 years old.
Wow.
Yes. And then you always go to a learn to skate program in Canada. And as you can imagine, there are a lot of people in Canada who know at least the basics of skating.
Yeah. Skating is a huge thing in Canada.
Huge thing. Yeah. So when I finished that, one of my coaches in the Learn to Skate was a figure skating coach. And she still is today, actually. And she said that I am talented enough that I could try out figure skating. And it was always like, okay, is it figure skating or hockey?
Yeah.
And I was a girly girl, and I chose figure skating because I could just see all the dresses and the sequins.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, that's probably why I went into figure skating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, it wasn't like, you know, hockey is more for men and figure skating more for women or?
I think I just saw like, yeah, the more feminine side, I think I was more interested in instead of hitting a puck with sticks.
Yeah.
I also, you know, if you ask me to look back, I really like the idea of being my own team with my coaches versus being on a big group in a big team uh, of like a hockey team,
yeah,
or a football team.
Totally different.
Completely different experience. Yeah. And I've been put in a position where I've done varsity figure skating in university. And I had to do synchronized skating, and I really didn't like it.
Never seen that in my life.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Synchronized skating. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They make all those fancy moves on the ice together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, just like in gymnastics.
It yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That is so interesting, but we're still in Toronto, and you go to university. You study radio and television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What drew you to that?
Yeah, At the time I also just didn't really have a proper direction. Was I going to go in business or something else? It was really like, I think my idea of university was business. And then I found this radio and television art program at Ryerson University, which is like dead in the center of Toronto.
Yeah.
And it was so intriguing and interesting to me because I come from an art school. And although Ryerson is a university, it was, you know, more hands-on, more practical learning, which I like. So I would still get a Bachelor of Arts with a minor in English and get all this hands-on experience, just kind of like what you're doing here at the podcast station.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, working with the soundboards and learning TV studio production and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But like did they go through any, like, you know, regarding content creation? What year are we when you're in
started at 18.
Yeah. So we are then on, what year is that?
Oh, year. That yeah. was 2010.
2010. But did they have any like courses on, you know, content creating for digital channels?
Yes, actually there were four areas mm-hmm. that we could kind of dive deeper into as the years went on. There was digital yeah. media, so we did have one avenue
yeah.
for that, one avenue for audio, TV studio production, and then more like single camera film production.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The digital media was definitely interesting to me, although yeah. I couldn't grasp Photoshop at the time and website building. What I did grasp was studio, the television studio.
Yeah.
Being a floor director and
yeah, and you
all those interesting like
yeah.
on the edge of your seat moments.
Exactly.
Wait, go.
Yeah.
That's what I've grown up learning anyway, so it came naturally to me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And during these years, like 2010, where like blogs are, and blog
yeah, pages I think it was starting to take off then.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Digital was just kind of
yeah.
coming to the surface, and it was there, it just wasn't a big thing. I also remember, I think in my last 2 years, they started a new program focusing on wearable technology.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was thinking, what the heck is wearable technology?
Yeah.
And I remember them saying, you know, like a watch maybe? And I had no idea what that meant until I saw the Apple Watch.
Exactly. So, many years later.
That's yeah. right. So it's really grown the digital area.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. Then maybe okay, you graduate there with the degree. In around what then 2014
I graduated.
And maybe like what was your maybe first job when you came out of those
yeah.
out of university?
Throughout university I had many internships related around media.
Was that through the school or
through the school and also independent?
Okay.
Yeah. So I remember even before I stepped into the classroom, we were all contacted on our university email to help with So You Think You Can Dance. And Canada had a version of that. So I volunteered, and that's how I met some of my closest friends today, through that internship. And it was just helping out with the audience and everything. But, you know, being exposed to a production such as So You Think You Can Dance, a reality series.
Huge. It's a huge program.
Yeah.
It has been, was there.
It, yeah, exactly. It's no longer there in Canada, but I think it's still... Yeah. On in the U.S.
It
and
is,
going
and
strong.
And the U.K.
And the U.K.
They have Dancing on Ice.
That's
as well
right.
In the U.K. It's huge.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, to fall off of that, to piggyback, I also did an internship in digital media for CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcast Company. It's our it's like our roof.
Yeah.
And that was like an on-ice competition. So it's like... retired hockey players and retired figure skaters come together and they put on a little show like Dancing with the Stars, and the audience and the public can call and vote for uh-huh. their favorites. There's elimination and then there's like a ultimate champion at the end.
Yeah.
I think that was that moment where I realized I wanted to be more in digital.
Yeah.
But within that time, you know, I was a figure skating coach, but mostly hoping to get into the figure skating world in broadcast.
Yeah.
I always looked up to, Tracy Wilson, who is a big name in Canadian figure skating. And I had the opportunity to, go under her wing. She was my coach at one point, or one of my many coaches, and also a broadcaster for figure skating.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to be like her, yeah. But that kind of, you know, the CV needs to be that you've been, you know, a national champion and everything. So I did not have that. But
she was a true role model then for you. These
absolutely.
Years.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. It's always women who are my role models.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how, that's great.
Yeah.
Then maybe talk about what directed you eventually to Iceland, but maybe we have you worked for hostel culture there in between, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So my career, my life, has been very nonlinear.
Yeah.
It's not your normal average life, although I'm sure nobody can claim their life to be very normal. But I had this opportunity to pick up and move to Budapest in Hungary and work as the social media manager there. Now, it's a startup company, so it was kind of like, you know, do whatever you want, experiment and explore. And
that's so exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So, one, I was starting my career then. Mm-hmm. Two, I was moving to a new country. And three, I was moving away from family.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of fresh things going on, a lot of learning. And my boyfriend at the time moved there with me. And he's the reason why I ended up in Iceland, actually.
Okay. And so that happened, what, in 2015,
16? 2015 is when I moved. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's like a huge life change.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Budapest. And how was life in Budapest?
Amazing. You know what? I loved it. There was a huge culture shock, of course. I had been there before, which is why I knew about this company and I kept in touch. And they offer free walking tours in a few cities around Europe. And I was just so, I was in my wanderlust mode and travel bug mode. And I just wanted to do anything I could to be traveling for work or live somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like back in university, I was an au pair in Sicily, for example, just a way to travel and to get away from home for a bit and explore different cultures. That mm-hmm. was my life for the longest time, is just on Google trying to find ways to leave.
And this is something that has just been in your heart for since you
absolutely.
Were very young.
Yeah,
to travel.
So I knew I was going to move sometime.
Yeah.
I moved to Budapest, and then after a year, I think I outgrew the job.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite the same all the time eventually.
So you were creating content there for what platform was it for?
I was all over the website, social media, blogs.
Yeah.
I was the blog manager. So I didn't quite create the actual content. I would take it and then present it onto social.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it, and managing the blog and
mm-hmm.
just making sure our name was out there. I did not have any, it was such a small company that we didn't have money towards ads.
No.
So there were no ads. It was all organic at the time. And
yeah.
Facebook ads weren't really like that big yet.
No.
So.
Like during these years, I'm just curious, like, were you then, then 2015, 16, are you then already thinking about, how to write text for like search engines, with the usage of words and headings and stuff like that?
Yes.
Did that already?
Yeah.
That was already a big thing then.
Definitely something that we learned in university, mm-hmm. in my program, and also through my internships.
Yeah.
And when I was a blogger for Calculated Traveler, a travel blog site.
Yeah.
So I had the opportunity to write about travel a lot.
Yeah.
At some point.
That's great. Yeah, you moved. So that's that's another company, Calculated Traveler magazine. Mm-hmm. So where were they based then?
From Toronto. They're actually family.
Oh, really?
So I did have the opportunity to write a few articles. I was, experimenting with creating video. I just had bought a new DSLR and I was just obsessed with that. And when I went to go travel, it's my aunt who owns this, and I would be hooked up with some tours, and then in response and as a thank you, I would write a blog about them. But I'd always also make a video.
Yeah.
With just music in the background and just cuts and practicing what I learned in university, basically.
Yeah, and tons of experience that you've had there. Mm-hmm. So you moved back to Toronto from Budapest?
I did not. I moved directly here.
Okay, tell us more about that. What happened?
What happened? So I told you my boyfriend at the time moved there. We were doing long distance.
Yeah, he was Canadian.
He's Icelandic.
He was Icelandic. Okay, wow. Okay.
Yeah, should we start over?
Rewind a little bit. Where did you meet an Icelandic man?
Funnily enough, I met him in Budapest.
In Budapest.
Before we moved there. So when I first saw Budapest, I was traveling as my graduation present to myself. I took a month and a half mm-hmm. to do my backpacking trip, as many people do. And I met him in Budapest at the hostel with his friends. I was alone. And, I was just, everybody's trying to make friends at 20-something years old and have a good time. I admit that was a very party-going trip. And
fun
times. And I met him there and we made this connection and we kept in touch. At the end of the summer, he actually visited me, and we were okay, let's do this. Yeah. And then we did long distance for a while until I got this job in Budapest.
Yeah.
And his idea was for him to come and study his bachelor's while he was there, while I was working.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. So you moved from Budapest to Reykjavik. And your first job here?
My first job was a bit of a failure, actually.
Okay, it's great to discuss failures because we always learn so much.
So at the time, I got really into networking. And I was just trying to reach out to any tourism company possible.
Yeah.
And I reached out to Eskimos. They're a luxury travel operator.
Yeah.
And somehow I caught their attention they asked me to come in and they hired me, but they only had me for 3 weeks before they said, we can't afford you. And they were actually at the time, I think they shouldn't have hired me because they had let go a few people.
Okay.
So their finances weren't that great at the time. And I was let go and I was crying and I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I should just move. And then the weather just turned, like, you know, the horizontal rain here.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first experience that October. And I was like, ooh, do I want to live through this? I don't know. And then I got my figure skating job.
Yeah.
Then I was, you know, looking at that. And I had previously coached before I even moved.
Yeah.
In Canada, but also in Iceland. I was here for like 4 weeks.
Really?
Once. Okay. And I did a trial and knowing that one day I might move here. So I had made those connections already. And then I was hired and then I took on private lessons, which was able to support me.
Yeah.
But of course, that wasn't going to support me enough just because it's such a small sport here.
Yes, it is.
And very different, different skating culture here than in Canada. So I decided to move on and I ended up working at Happy Campers, which is a camper van company.
Yeah.
I worked at the front desk. I was customer service, but I was also in writing blogs and marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those were my first couple of jobs before I hit the jackpot and got a job at Iceland Air when they were redoing their organization.
Yeah, yeah. And you were there for 3 years almost?
Nearly 3 years.
Yeah.
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 I really loved my time there. It was a digital marketing role focusing on the North American gateways. I felt very challenged. It was my first, like, let's say, real office job. Mm-hmm.
For a big company.
For a bigger company, yes, yeah. And an international company. And it was right in my alley. I mean, everything about the job description kind of hit all of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that job and I've made lifelong friends there now. And
yeah,
I've learned a lot.
Think back of that time just fondly.
Fond memories.
Fond memory, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
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 And then COVID hit.
That's just, yeah.
Yeah. And I can laugh about it now, but at the time that was tough.
Yeah.
For everybody. But I was just heartbroken because for so many reasons. I mean, I was going to stop working with my friends. I was going to stop working for a company that I really liked and was supporting.
Yeah.
And also, not to mention the nice benefits that I had to fly home.
Yeah.
And visit my family once in a while. So it was a tough time.
Yeah.
Unemployed for a year, but kind of brought me to where I am today and what I did in between.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I guess I can look back and be grateful for that challenge,
mm-hmm.
and maybe obstacle or fork in the road.
Yeah.
In my life journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it led you to, okay, are we now at the moment where we discuss Bao Bao?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's discuss Bao Bao. Now we're back to your love of food.
Ah, my love of food. Everybody who knows me knows I love food. I am not shy to say that.
No.
And
shouldn't be.
So Bao Bao originates from my craving for my favorite barbecue pork bun from a Chinese bakery that my grandmother used to take me to. It was just around the corner from her home in Chinatown in Toronto. And because I hadn't been, like, it's COVID time, I haven't been home to, you know, satisfy all these cravings. I was like, darn it, I'm going to make my own.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how to do it. I never proofed dough, really. And I think the most technical I've done is baking cookies. Cooking was a different thing.
Yeah.
I love to cook. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take on this challenge. Why not? I have all this time in the world. And I started feeding my friends. And you know some of them. I was feeding. You can imagine they were like running to my door. Feed me, feed me. So I was feeding them these really probably not great barbecue pork buns. And eventually I got better and better, the rising of the bun. And they were like, we would buy this. And I'm like, this was the light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And I started... I built a Instagram page.
Yeah. It's still there.
Facebook page. It's still there.
And I was fortunate enough to have tasted some of your, it was filled with Nutella, one of them.
Yes. So my first real business was when Icelandair invited me to provide food for a brunch.
Yeah.
Were you there for that?
I was there. Yeah, one time when you came in with your...
That's probably it.
And several sorts.
And it was amazing. Me just catching up with good people and friends and just testing the market, really.
Yeah.
And people loved it. I even presented my favorite hot dog bun.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of weird because it was the morning time, but people still tried it, and I was so happy. It warms my heart to feed people. It's something I think I'm meant to do in a way, mm-hmm. whether it's for business or just for pleasure. And then that kind of kicked off. I contacted this company called Eldstadi.
Yeah,
it's like a shared professional kitchen space where you can rent out the space.
Yeah.
And Eva, who's the owner, she was my mentor for a bit. And if I was still doing this right this second, she'd still be there and I'd be under her wing. But she taught me so many things and put me through some like food quality boot camp and stuff. And I was sponsored for it. And it was really just an amazing experience. And she really, encouraged me to go to the Hafnarfjörður Christmas market.
Yeah.
So I went there and I was at a stall for Eldstadið and I was selling my buns and everybody was loving it. I even remember taking a photo of this little kid in her stroller eating one of my pineapple buns, which doesn't have pineapple, by the way. It just looks like the outside of a pineapple. And it just, I loved every moment of that. It was hard work, but I had my first experience in a professional kitchen and everything. And then from that, I was contacted by somebody who runs the food truck.
Yeah.
I know. Festivals. Festivals.
Yeah, they went between neighborhoods.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he, at the time, was hosting, he was the general manager of the house where
Skelfiskmarkaðurinn.
Yes, thank you, yes. Yeah. So he kind of took over that place and had three different pop-ups at a time. Yeah. He contacted me and said, hey, I know you make Chinese buns, but do you do dim sum? I'm really craving dim sum. I used to live in London for like 11 years, and that's something I'm really missing. Do you make it? And to be honest, I did not have a lot of experience in that, but what I said was yes.
Yeah.
And, you got to fake it till you make it sometimes.
Yeah, that's great.
And I went home, and all I did was bake, cook, everything, just experimenting with all these different dishes. I came out with like this huge menu. I fed him samples and he's like, this is amazing, but you need to compact your list. I mean, this is way too much.
For a menu.
This was like a whole Chinese restaurant menu we're talking about, and they offer a lot. So I said yes. We opened this restaurant the day of Chinese New Year's in February. I think it was February 12th. And for a month, I was just nonstop 24/7 a businesswoman.
Yeah.
My own businesswoman. And it was such a pleasure to have that experience. And it was hard. It was very, very difficult. But I think I learned that it takes a lot to be an entrepreneur and an owner of a company, especially in the service industry.
Yeah.
Did come across some interesting people who visited my restaurant. And also that I should hire more than one person. I hired my chef.
Yeah.
And it was just me at the front of house, and we managed to just smash this pop-up. Like, we were very successful. I was very proud of both of us and really proud of where it started to where it was.
Yeah.
At that point, we came out in the green with a profit, and I couldn't be happier because people were just coming back. There were some more well-known people going to the restaurant to try my food. Mm-hmm. And I even heard that the owner of Dragon Dim Sum was there to check it out. Wow. So, I mean, I'm honored.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, but then it was like a pop-up kind of thing.
Yes, it was like a full-on, it was a full-on service restaurant.
Yeah.
With, I think it was 6 different dishes, mostly steamed.
Mm-hmm.
We made fresh noodles with shrimp inside and some egg tarts, which was more like the dessert. Mm-hmm. Although dim sum, there's no like courses. It's kind of like whatever's ready will come on the table.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
The space was also just perfect. It reminded me of a banquet hall that you would see in at a Chinese restaurant. It would be, you know, red carpet. One wall is all mirrors, dark wood, and I put lanterns up. So.
Yeah, it was a beautiful space. But they closed that concept there at least.
Yeah, unfortunately, they had to pass on the keys to the new owners.
Yeah.
And so I only ran for 1 month.
Yeah.
So 4 different weekends, long weekends, Thursday to Sundays. And it was unfortunate. I was just getting started, I feel. And if it was still open, I think I would have the motivation to keep going for a while longer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to stop. I got addicted to it.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop, but I had to, and I kind of came crashing down.
Yeah, I can imagine. Just stand there all by yourself. It does not, like, not in the long, for the long run, it doesn't work out, of course.
Yeah.
But after this experience, that adventure, at least for the time being, is, you haven't opened it again anywhere else, have you?
I haven't, but I've had interest. I've had people asking me if I have a food truck.
Yeah.
And they're like already ordering before they even know the answer. And I'm like, no, I can't. I'm so sorry. I'm still trying to pursue that aspect of my life and that business in small ways as I can. Eventually, my dream for that is to get some products out in Hekoip or Kronan and even the vegan shop, because one of my dumplings is vegan.
Yeah.
And that was very popular.
I mean, people know at least now what a bao bun is.
And I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, bao actually means bun.
Okay. So I'm so saying bun bun.
Bun bun. Yeah. It's cute. Exactly.
But okay, then let's just say it's on hold for a bit. It's not okay.
Yes.
Bao Bao still exists.
It still exists.
Instagram page.
If you want to order buns, you can still do it. I'll do it for you.
Okay, so you can. So people can call you up and you can. Okay.
Yeah.
Great to know. So we'll advertise that here. Excellent. So that you are still up for special orders.
I would love that, because that just motivates me to keep doing it and just practicing my art.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing. But then you had to go back to the, in quote, real world.
Mm. Yes.
the thing you, of course, had been or are a specialist in, digital marketing.
Yeah.
And you started to work for the Blue Lagoon.
I did. Another great company.
Yeah.
I was so happy to get that job. I was excited to promote and market their products. Such a great list and menu of products, luxury and everything a tourist could want. I mean, it's the top tourist attraction.
Yeah.
In Iceland. So I really couldn't go wrong with.
No.
With working there.
Is it like the Blue Lagoon and the Northern Lights, the two?
Yeah.
The two things that definitely people want to visit and see the most here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So that was an interesting experience and a good time with the Blue Lagoon.
Yes, I did have a good experience there. It was a little different from Icelandair.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't as... It was a very specific product.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't like it, but Icelandair was great because I had all these destinations
yeah.
in Europe, which I love. So it was very easy to kind of control that and understand it completely.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue Lagoon is amazing because it was a much smaller team in marketing.
Yeah.
So that was different for me where I had to... Unlike Icelandair, Blue Lagoon had an in-house designer, graphic designer, at the time.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah, and that was really nice to yeah. to go up to him and ask him for certain creatives and things to push on Facebook or Instagram. And
exactly. So then you've also been doing content creation for both Marel and Nordic Luxury.
Yes, so for Marel, I was focused more so on the web pages. Yeah. So the products, more like blog style, about what the products can produce mm-hmm. for manufacturers for food. And for Nordic Luxury, it's a luxury travel company. Yeah. And they offer bespoke and the ultimate experience in the Nordics.
Yeah.
Whether it's in Iceland or Norway all the way to Svalbard and Greenland.
Yeah.
I was working on the social media and the email marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So as I mentioned here in the intro that and like having a well-written content, you know, for all of those companies that are selling their products and introducing their products online, it's so, so hugely important today. And I love checking out and what ChatGPT says about stuff. And I asked like, what is the value of well-written content to tech solution companies? And the summary was like, it's invaluable to tech solution companies as it adds in effective communication, establishes thought leadership, improves search engine visibility, generates leads, educates customers, and enhances brand building efforts. It's an essential tool for attracting, engaging, and converting potential customers in the highly competitive technology industry. And of course, this also applies to all of those companies like Marel who wants to get information about all their products online. So to have someone with your expertise, you know, who can write, you know, to have this well-written content written, and we know it's for search engine optimization purely. I mean that is the value, to rank high in Google. Google is, of course, dominant. This is what it all, and I know that often when I talk about this with content creators, it's to write creatively and have the search engines also, you know what I mean, not hanging over your head, but you have to. You have to have maybe some other issues in mind and the wording in mind when you're writing for search engines really ultimately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a bit of, so even though it's content creation,
yeah,
there's also a technical aspect to it.
Definitely.
So we do have to stay updated and like I'm on the edge of my seat all the time.
Yeah.
What's changing in SEO and
yeah.
What do I need to do for my new content or old content even?
Exactly, yeah.
If I want to make sure that our pages are seen at the top of a Google search.
Yeah.
It gets complicated.
Yeah, and Google can change their algorithm just like that.
That's right.
We have nothing to say about it.
That's why it's so dynamic. It's, you always have to be trying new things. It's all about experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that because I don't like to do the same thing every day.
No.
So trying a blog with more keywords or less or being more authentic.
Yeah.
As the brand, as the brand tone of voice.
Mm-hmm.
I found is more important to me and what I feel is right for a company than being like super robotic and like throwing in all the keywords you could possibly do. You kind of have to find a nice balance.
Exactly.
It's so that nice because balance. Ultimately a human is reading your work.
Exactly.
And you want them to relate and resonate with what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So for travel, you want to talk about how amazing and amazing exploration is and how passionate this company is.
Yeah.
To help you get to that point.
Exactly.
To go on a polar bear, you know, exploration yeah. in Svalbard as an example.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you don't want a boring text. You don't want something that just doesn't resonate.
No, no, no. Have you tried out like ChatGPT and how?
I have.
It is scary, I think, but it's still fascinating on like the content and the writing that you can get from there or
yeah,
for it.
Exactly. I know it is. It's a bit intimidating, isn't it?
It is.
I do use it. I admit I use it. Yeah. I use it as a skeleton, as a building block
exactly.
for me to get to the end result.
It can save time.
But absolutely.
Then, yeah, it can. I've experienced it.
But it will that. Never, in my belief, it will never replace the creativity and everything. And it doesn't know exactly what you want.
No.
As much as you try to feed it with all the details you need.
Yeah.
It's not, I've tried it. It just doesn't work, but I do like it as a tool, as a resource to help speed everything up.
It is learning every, imagine all the millions of people that are feeding it.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I've been thinking about also, just like, okay, you ask a question, you get an answer, but the answer is of course built on some text on the internet that somebody has a copyright for.
Yes, that's also a bit of an issue, isn't it?
It is an issue. It's gonna be an issue. I think more and more, and not only for text, but also for images. You know, all sorts of visual and design.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we are experiencing such but we're experiencing I think this time now. I mean, you can imagine. ChatGPT came available in November last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy how it has somehow it's in our lives now.
Yeah, that's right.
During this short amount of time.
Wow, I can't believe it was only November. Thinking back, I tried to kind of avoid it because I said, "There's no way I'm going to use it." And then I was like, "You know what? Let me try."
Yeah.
Started playing around with like, "Could you write me a poem about a cat?"
Yeah.
Or whatever, and it was so nice, and mm-hmm. it was a cute poem, actually.
Becomes your friend.
I even, I have proper conversation, like, thank you so much for writing that. It was so lovely.
It's crazy.
And now I do use it as a resource for work, because I think it does speed up the process.
It does.
Gives you some ideas that you might not be able to get otherwise.
Yeah.
And especially in my role where I'm the only one. And I don't have a lot of time to brainstorm with others in the company.
Mm-hmm.
It's ChatGPT is a friend.
Yeah, it's a coworker.
Yes.
That might be the right word. It's a no joke. No. But it's interesting.
Yes.
And how this will now progress for the next month and a year, it will be, I think, really interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're also trying to put some regulation. Yeah, just to Also with what I was just mentioning about like copyright things and stuff like that. So it's interesting time that we are, I think, living.
Like I said, digital is just, and technology is so dynamic and ever-changing, ever-evolving.
Ever. It's just,
We can't keep up anymore.
No, not really. We just tried. We just try to do our best every day.
Yes.
That's the only thing we can control. But much of it is just out of our control. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe let's discuss your current role at Terran Systems as a marketing manager. And mm-hmm. Terran Systems is, of course, thank you for that, one of the sponsors of this show. So
yeah.
I know a little bit about, and we, the listeners, we know a little bit about Terran Systems.
Yeah, I'm so happy that I could be here and share a little more about about my company.
But what is like Terran Systems and what do you do there?
So I am a marketing specialist there. I manage everything around marketing. I'm the only one in my department.
It's not a big department.
It's not. It's a very tiny department, part of business development. And I am the first marketer, in-house marketer of Terran Systems. So it's also a brand new role for the company. I'm basically, you know, I'm responsible for carving the path of marketing and figuring out how to reach out to our market and audience.
Yeah, yeah. It's partly owned by Isavia, isn't it, Terran Systems?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have connections to Isavia. Isavia ANS as well, which is
exactly
under Isavia.
Yeah.
But what we do is we are a software development company that's been based in Iceland actually for more than 25 years, if you can believe it or not.
Wow.
It is not a startup company. That's what a lot of people think when I mention the name to them. It's like, where is it from? Like, what? Is it an Icelandic company? Yes, it is. And it really is unknown because I had no idea about it until I saw it in a job ad for it, and I decided to apply. It is an international company, and we build and develop or design next generation air traffic management systems, but also simulators to train air traffic controllers.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
We have our systems in all over the world, actually. Ireland, Indonesia, Greenland, South Korea, and Hungary is a big one as well. We are headquartered in Iceland, but we also have a little office in Budapest.
Oh, back to Budapest.
Yeah, I know. There's always this fun connection with Hungary.
Yeah.
And, you know, the origin of this company, it all started in 1997 when the systems engineering department at Háskóli Íslands partnered with the Civil Aviation Authority.
Okay.
So from that small project, it eventually evolved into what Terran Systems is today.
Okay.
And that's kind of cool that it started from humble beginnings from a university.
Yeah.
And a small department
there. It's like a startup company, I mean, at the time.
Absolutely. And for those who are interested in aviation, I can tell you our systems are similar to Flight Radar 24 display. So if you can imagine like watching Flight Radar and seeing all these like thousands of flights in the sky, this live traffic, well, ours is a more intense technical and intuitive system that's interactive for air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are a company that's building next generation, which means we're dynamic and we're creating systems that are able to keep up with the times, to keep up with the ever-evolving airspace.
Yeah.
And I want to try to explain to you, if that's okay, what exactly air traffic management is.
Yeah.
Because when I tell people, you know, it's a tricky business even for me.
Yeah.
I've been there for a year now. And it's a bit complicated, so I'd love to try my hand at describing how this works and where my company fits in aviation.
Yeah.
So you know how pilots interact with air traffic controllers throughout a flight?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because they rely on their expertise and knowledge in the separation of air traffic.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
You there with me?
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah.
Okay. So The typical person actually thinks the pilot does all the work, but there's a more complicated ecosystem to get from point A to B. And that's with the partnership between the pilot, the air traffic controller, and then our systems that help the air traffic controller.
I remember I've been like, I once visited the tower at Reykjavik Airport, mm-hmm. where they're like, and I saw, you know, the screens that they have.
Yeah.
So that must be then maybe your software.
Yes, it is our software. It's an older version of our newest software.
Probably, yeah.
But that's the other thing is so many people think air traffic control just happens in this tower. It doesn't. Did you know that air traffic controllers are in a room without any windows and they're just looking at a computer screen with our systems on it?
Imagine that.
And they're controlling the airspace.
Yeah.
They're saying, they're telling the pilots, so the pilots operate the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And they rely on the air traffic controllers to say, you need to be at this certain altitude, this certain speed, to avoid any collisions. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason why there are air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
The pilots, as scary as this sounds, they don't see anything around them.
No.
They don't know the traffic in the sky.
No.
They're using the information from our systems that are fed to the air traffic controllers.
Yeah.
And then fed to them.
Yeah.
It, as I said, a whole ecosystem, and it is quite interesting once you get more into it.
Yeah.
And I'm, like I said, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
It's so much to take in.
And I just know that the airspace above Iceland is huge.
It's humongous.
It's humongous. One of the biggest, I think, isn't it? One of the biggest one in the world.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we also, you know, we are connected to, as I mentioned, these different, our different clients around the world or the countries that use our systems. We're also here based in Iceland. So Isavia ANS, they use our systems. And so we cover the Icelandic airspace, which includes a bit of Greenland.
Yeah, yeah.
As well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
this
quite incredible
how... This is a whole world
how,
that you just really, you don't know nothing about unless you've, like...
Absolutely.
...been there somewhere.
Until I worked at TURN, I thought things were run from the tower.
Yeah.
Tower is actually just for takeoff and landing. The other air traffic controllers are focused on the en route, which is in between.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
when they're at, like, that 30,000 miles high. 30,000 miles high, right? Everybody knows that one.
This is interesting. Oh my god! Yeah, it's a whole new world out there. But I would want to also, because now we've gone through, like, you've worked with several Icelandic companies, and but how has it been for you, like, personally? You English is your, you know, you use English, you know, that's your native tongue. You don't speak Icelandic, at least not in. In a business setting, yeah. How has it been for you coming here to Iceland? Like, if we talk about this, to be inclusive, I had a really good talk with Berenice, who works for Advania, and she's been very open about how it is to find her way as working for an Icelandic company. Being English speaking, mm-hmm. how has that gone for you, Leah? If we just go on a bit of a truno.
Okay. It's generally been okay.
Yeah.
Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I've. There are always some bumps in the road for each and every company I've worked for.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it's, you know, it's Iceland. It's a very small community, and I understand how important the Icelandic language is. It's hard, though, as somebody who has to do their job, when maybe meetings or just contact at the water station or the coffee station
is
in Icelandic. I could actually provide some nice insights, maybe, if it has to do with work. I don't care about the personal stuff, but, you know, business stuff. I want to know what's going on and things like that. And I have found that sometimes that's lacking in companies. At the same time, I think they are now doing a way better job.
Yeah. Do you feel the difference just since you came here?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. It's evolved since I started working here.
Okay.
It's been really nice. There's more understanding.
Yeah.
The fact is, a lot of Icelanders speak English, so it is easier for us to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they should never speak Icelandic at work, but it just makes life easier and us to be able to communicate and execute properly.
Yeah, yeah.
I particularly love Turn Systems because we're a company that has, you know, 30% of us are from different nations, 16 nationalities.
Okay.
And we have to speak English.
Yeah.
Luckily, a lot of them have lived here for many, many years, and they can speak Icelandic, and I'm so impressed. And others, you know, they don't have the Icelandic, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, but at Turn Systems, I never feel like I'm a burden to anybody, which has been the case previously.
Yeah.
In smaller departments or... You know, just generally companies that are set in their own ways.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but, you know, I think that's losing the benefit of having a multicultural community and employees.
Exactly.
So I'll sit down at the lunch table or a meeting and automatically it's English.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Because I know that I will be able to involve myself.
Exactly.
And I won't miss a beat.
No, no.
So it feels good to be
included. And just to have, like, if there's some announcement in the, I don't know, in the canteen or something about some, you know, something that's happening outside of the workplace, we're not asking that everything is only in English, but to have at least Icelandic and also English.
Yeah.
So everyone can be included.
To be a bit mindful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that it's getting better. I think so too.
Yes.
I think so too. I hope so.
Well, with the influx of more nationals, immigrating,
Iceland needs is more people, and we have to be able to attract specialists.
Yeah.
And therefore, we have to start to think about this to have everything in English.
Yeah.
As well, at least. Then I wanted to maybe just maybe on it would be interesting, like, yeah, future goals. Where do you see yourself? Is there anything have you thought about?
Are we talking about
just everything, like
anything?
Working in Iceland?
Well, of course, I'm an idealist, so I think my head is in the clouds all the time.
Yeah, that's great.
Thinking about anything and everything possible. Baobao is definitely something I'm passionate about and want to find a way to continue that.
Yeah.
I also one day dream of moving to Italy,
mm-hmm.
like properly buying a place and opening a boutique bed and breakfast.
Oh, sounds amazing.
And then I'm going to feed everybody and also just share my passion for Italy and travel.
Yeah.
I'm also currently learning Italian
okay.
on Duolingo, so I'm not too far from this dream.
No, I mean, you have your multicultural roots and you have.
Yeah. So like those are like future things. I'm really happy where I am right now in my career, and I do really like working for this company because there's a lot of opportunity for growth and development mm-hmm. within the company. So they pride themselves on being able to encourage and support their current employees, which is really nice.
That's
I also have to talk about women in my company because this is Women in Tech, and you know, I am really proud to say that I'm in a company where it's pretty equal. It's a pretty good ratio of male to female. We have 30% 30% women, 50% who are in mid-management.
Okay.
And we have 25% at the top level management. So that's something to kind of look up to and
it really is.
Be really impressed about.
Yeah.
It is a small company. We have so many amazing women in different areas.
Yeah.
Including our amazing accountant and also just the cooks.
Yeah.
In our canteen. Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for them, we would all be hangry all the time.
Oh my
God,
yes, so super important.
Shout out to them. Yeah. I mean, and these are all women we're talking about. It's
yeah,
really important.
Yeah, really important. I totally agree. Totally
yeah.
agree. But I forgot to mention maybe like for turn systems, like it's a B2B marketing more or less, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. But you use social media as well, or what?
In mostly focused on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, of course, because it's a B2B thing.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm mostly focusing on that.
Yeah.
It is tricky because I'm used to B2C. I'm used to business to customer, right, consumer.
Yeah.
So it's been a slow but steady ride to really pick up on B2B. And especially such a niche market as...
It's a very niche market, I would admit.
And it's something that my company is still playing around with and experimenting on on what we can do to really just put ourselves out there. And we are doing it. I'm sure there are other ways that we can. So anybody who has ideas can can maybe reach out and share
but
with me.
But I think like LinkedIn is a very powerful probably medium for a B2B marketing, you know.
Oh, yeah. I post everything there.
Yeah.
And then we also have Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Because we have different aspects of marketing, I guess. We have the business side, and then we have recruitment and people and culture and everything, which I really love as well. And then I have not just the social media, but I do event project management as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to trade shows and exhibitions and present ourselves there. So there are different ways that B2B companies present themselves.
Yeah. But you find it interesting. Also, it's great for your experience just to have been working on both of those.
Yeah.
You know.
Something I've picked up like that I've really enjoyed in this past year of working there is doing that event project managing.
Yeah.
I think I thrive on that. I really love the planning aspect and being in touch with so many people, so many stakeholders, and booking hotels, booking flights, you know, exploring what the city we're in has to offer and like planning some dinners with everyone. And then, of course, the booth. What is our booth going to look like? Who are we working with?
Yeah.
The past two shows that I've worked with, Turn Systems on has been in partnership with Isavia ANS as well. So I've gotten to network and have a great collaboration with them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I can imagine you're right in your element there.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun because I do like the people, the connection aspect of marketing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yes. But more on a personal note, do you have any like routine that helped you tackle all those projects that you're working on every time? Because I hear you're often with many things going on at the same time.
Yeah, I'm juggling too much.
Yeah.
Personal and work.
But don't you also just also thrive a little bit on it?
I do, but sometimes that's not great.
No.
No, 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 no. Burnout is not good.
No, no.
But I don't want to burn out.
I don't mean it in a negative. No, you know what I mean? It's fun to have a lot to do.
Oh, absolutely.
But sometimes you need something to just like, okay, well, Leah, now you have to like.
Mm-hmm. So to be able to have a clean mind at night so I can go to sleep.
Yeah.
I do like writing lists at work.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I write down what I need to do the next day or the coming days.
Okay.
And on Friday, I do a bigger list of like, what's to come the next week and the weeks after.
Okay. And pen and paper thing? Or
I'm a pen and paper person.
Okay.
And then, that's not really eco-friendly, but that's what I do and that's what feels the best.
I love that.
I also have online tools as well that we use at work and to be able to just stay organized.
Yeah.
Content calendars and just lists so that my colleagues can see what I'm up to as well.
Yeah, of course.
Good old Excel spreadsheets
too. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What about just for you personally to relax and recharge? What do you do?
Cooking,
of course.
Making dumplings. It's one of my favorite pastimes. I can watch TV and fold the dough.
Oh, my God.
And it's just like it's meditation for me. I can't sit there at a yoga class, but I can meditate with my dumplings.
Yeah.
Like, as funny as that sounds.
Like mindfulness when you are.
Yes. It's just this repetitive motion and you don't have to think too hard about it.
No.
I really enjoy that. I love travel.
Yeah.
And then I go eat when I travel.
Yeah. That's great. What about figure skating? Is that out of your life?
Oh, right now it is.
Yeah.
I want to go back, but I'm over 30 now, so.
You have to be careful, maybe. More careful.
I went during COVID, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I retired a long time ago, but I went back, and I was able to do an axel, which is one and a half rotations in the air. And my spins got fast and everything, like kind of back to normal, but. Kind of older body. I'm telling you, when I hit 30, everything kind of tightened
really?
Up. Yeah. So I have to make sure I'm moving. I have an e-bike.
Yeah,
so I can get up the hill of Breholt every time I go home. And I'm not feeling down on myself because I can't make it up the hill. I love friends and family. Like, that's so important to me. So being able to spend time with my friends here. And then when I'm in Canada, I'm spending a lot of time with my family.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe as a final question, are there any like books or podcasts or any other like media that you would want to recommend to our listeners?
Ooh. Yeah, I do have, I can share one podcast, I guess, on the top of my head.
Yeah.
I love true crime.
Yeah.
All started with Serial.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like went off to like Serial spinoffs and everything. And then Isdal Woman, like the Norwegian true crime story about a woman, an unknown woman who was found, or an unidentified woman who was found in the Isdal Valley near Bergen, I believe.
Yeah.
And they've never solved it.
I heard about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. So they have an English and a Norwegian version of this podcast.
Okay, interesting.
And but right now I'm just enjoying some small town murder, which is first and foremost a comedy podcast.
Okay.
But it's these two hilarious guys who are just going back and forth discussing these true crime stories around mostly the US.
Okay.
In these tiny towns, and they're just making fun of the murderers and the towns themselves. And they have a disclaimer now because people were telling them how bad they were for making this comedic and everything. But I guess in a way it's lighthearted and like with their humor.
Yeah.
Definitely not the crime itself.
No.
But it's fun to listen to when you're taking a walk or driving.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, just easy to do up the Ulvsfjell.
Yeah. Walk up Ulvsfjell and listen to
yes,
to
so it's
true
like a,
crime.
One episode up and down.
Yeah. That's great. Let's make that our final words here. Thank you so much for coming, Leah. It's been a true pleasure for me to get to know you and to spend this time here with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me and thinking that I would be a great lady.
You are, you have been. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. We want to thank our sponsors, Gekko, Tactical, and Tern Systems for their support. but without them we wouldn't be able to publish this podcast. Don't hesitate to contact me through LinkedIn if you have any comments or questions. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Until next, take care.